views and opinions expressed on Geeks Under the Influence are that of the panelists and not of our sponsors, Amazon.com and TeePublic. Parental discretion is advised.
Love how popular The Boys was, because the original comic was supposed to be basically making fun of superhero comics.
Right, it was just a full satire, and it became like actual satire, but it's like, oh no, this is how things would actually happen.
But that's what I love about The Orville too, because The Orville is like the thing that I could never really fully connect with Trek, and I love Trek. Don't get me wrong, I'm not this person that's either Wars or Trek. No, absolutely both. I love them both.
They're give
both
us amazing. The nerd.
Yeah, they're both incredible. Yeah. But Trek was a little bit less approachable because of, like, growing up really poor and seeing it firsthand in a really dark way how bad people are. Mm-hmm. And then you have Trek where it's just like, no, people are great if you give them the chance. Like, no, they're not.
And there's no class society.
They fucking suck.
The idealism that Trek goes for is kind of, it's hard to take on now as an adult post-COVID.
Right?
Like, oh, yeah.
Idealistically, if we think about these things, this is who we want to be. But in the pre-COVID world, we're like, and this is who we can be. In the post-COVID world, it's like rainbows and unicorns and lollipops. It might as well be the same as the Orville slash Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah, Next Generation is fucking Candyland. Yeah. And in the meantime, absolutely, the Orville is like that scene in Never Ending Story where they're in the swamps of sadness. Like, they're dealing with some pretty heavy shit.
Just flat out, like, are we going to be able to make it out of this intact?
No. Folks is gonna die.
Yeah.
Like, it gets rough, but I love it for that, because as much as we definitely need that optimistic beyond rationale Star Trek kind of approach to things, because
but also realistic.
But that realistic approach of, like, seeing man is fallible and seeing man struggling with trying to reach their potential is important as well.
To be fair. All creatures are fallible, because we're not dealing with just humans.
True. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut out all the aliens.
My dogs and robots.
Be all inclusive if we're going to be talking about this.
True. Very true.
You know.
Well, I think one of the big differentiators for the Orville from TNG is that it takes TNG, but it adds the quiet moments on purpose. It adds the quiet moments on purpose, and it also adds, like, copious amounts of casual drinking. Because,
right?
Well, it's Seth MacFarlane took the idea of Star Trek and was like, I'm going to make my own Star Trek with hookers and blackjack. I mean, that is the best way. Like, if you look at the first season, the way it started, but then the way it rolled, it was fluid, but it worked.
And then it was off to the races of Tarantino with the rumor of him doing a Star Trek, and Seth MacFarlane be like, oh, and they're both just rushing to try to get there.
I remember that, yeah.
No, I'm going to do it. No, I'm going to do it. My hookers.
But the nice thing is that they've consistently included in canon, like, you know, consequences of actions. Going back to, like, first episode of, like, what happens if we, you know, interact with one species, and then, you know, three seasons later, like, suddenly they're the ones that are fucking with us because they're bored.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
And
yeah.
they haven't lost sight of, like, we might have screwed up somewhere down the line. Bad.
Yeah. It wasn't episodic like the original series. Enough of the very important storylines came to full circle, and it worked so well by this third season, which fortunately Hulu picked up because, of course, Fox canceled something.
Yeah,
I mean, and I'm not talking about racism.
And I do want to talk about the tonal shift that happened even before Hulu picked up the series when we get done with the intros here. But what we are talking about is the Orville. So we're going to be focusing a lot on season 3.
New
but we haven't. I don't think we've done an Orville episode, so we are going to be calling back to seasons 1 and 2 as well. So spoiler alert for anybody that is not caught up. We're going to be digging deep into Seth MacFarlane's Star Trek adjacent show that's like has it's like the all new X-Men when that series came out. It's like it had no right to be as good as it is.
Yeah,
like
true.
It had zero. Yeah. Like true. I'm reading it like, God damn it! Like this is really good. This is unreasonably good. Is the way that I thought about the Orville, like, halfway through the first season. Like, Jesus Christ. So, thank you so much for listening to this episode. All things the Orville. Welcome.
Whee! Whee!
Hey, this is Mike Henry from Family Guy, and you're listening to Geeks Under the Influence. Yay!
Yay!
That is awesome.
Had to get that one.
I forgot you had that one.
Yeah, I had that locked and loaded.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I thought it was an appropriate one since he actually plays a character on the show as
right.
well. So.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Wait. Who is he on the Orville?
He's the, I forget the name of the character, but he's got a big, like, almost leopard print head, and he's, like,
the
mildly annoying dude that is constantly trying to, like, flirt, but he's, like, awkward about it.
Well, he's always trying to be in with everybody.
Yeah, he's trying to be in with everybody, but he's, like, mildly annoying to everyone, and nobody's, like, really that into him hanging out.
Yeah.
Very, very fun choice for a character.
Absolutely.
So, before we continue with the fleet of the Orville,
more
let's talk
fun
about,
choices of a character.
Let's talk about our way team here. First off, of course, my partner in crime on Smack My Pitch Up when we bother to record an episode, which I promise will be soon.
Soon.
Tondi Woodard is here.
Tondi Woodard reporting for duty.
Also from duty. My handle is Jonathan Blade.
And that as well.
That's one a thing as too. Well. Yeah, my compatriot on rebooting and remaking stuff, which is so fun to have you on this episode because it's basically like what if we took Star Trek and added alcoholism
with like people from S.H.I.E.L.D. and Family Guy.
Exactly.
The answer is awesome. It's great. Great choice.
Done. I'll take it.
It's kind of like anytime that I hang out at this next panelist's place where his garage is full of the weirdest combination of people, but somehow it tends to work. Nick is here.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey.
The Woo. Last time I was Dune, I think. So
it's Dune was the last episode that I was on. So
that's close to a year.
It's been like better part of a year. Yeah.
Damn. Yeah. Well, happy to have you on. We were talking about the Orville. So when it came up as we were going to do that for an episode, it's kind of a no-brainer.
Damn.
So
I mean, space sci-fi is my kind of wheelhouse.
Oh, absolutely.
And
this feels kind of a missing piece of the sci-fi space show pie, where you've got the like hard sci-fi stuff with some Trek, with the Expanse, stuff like that, and then you've got the like the wackadoo stuff as well, like super wacky, and this is this weird in between that exists.
Yeah, like it's not the Expanse. It's not the Lex kind of shit. It's
give me Farscape over Lex.
Even Doctor Who that does deal with a lot of like social commentary, a lot, and it doesn't shy away from that, is still fucking zany. It's still in a police box at the end of the day.
That's true. From the 60s, no less.
From the 60s, yeah.
Yeah. Right,
yeah. I feel like this is so much its own thing, though. The Orville is, it's a take on a 90s show, so it's 90s TV today. It's got the comfy sci-fi aesthetic. It's got the basically plush couches, clean spaceship, clean uniforms. Everybody looks like they're having a good time. It is exactly the opposite of everything that came after Star Trek. I don't think anything ever tried to duplicate that feeling.
No.
And I can just our next panelist sitting there after putting his two, chaotic Tasmanian devil boys to bed and looking at the nice clean sterile ship and then looking at all the toys in the living room and going, ugh.
No, we just moved all their shit into their bedroom.
Oh, smart.
Fuck that.
See, that's smart. Yeah.
No, fuck that. Hurt me.
We've got the Geek Father himself, Scotty P, is here.
Hey, guys.
My co-host on this one.
That's what, yeah. I don't, oh, God.
You're the white chocolate, right? Because Kyle's the macadamia nut. I think you're the white chocolate. I think.
Sure.
Yeah.
Just because I know it'll annoy Steven. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Cool. Yeah. For me to perform this duty and to annoy Steven, I'm here. Our host, our leader, our captain.
Oh no.
Admiral. No, you'd be an admiral at this point, I think. For GY.
Yeah, I guess. Fuck. Oh.
Yeah.
No, you got a fleet, dude.
Yeah, this fleet is going going down.
Hey, we never said it was the top fleet.
No.
But it's a fleet. Mike the Hobbit.
Like, this is like if the fleet, like, attacked its own country on accident. Like, it's kind of the vibe that we got.
We hit self-destruct. Yeah, whoops.
Never let them take your captain's seat.
Like, if there was a bunch of ships following the Titanic, I think that's what this would be.
Like, this is what happens when you hit the e-brake on the
emergency. Well, if that ship's going down, maybe we should go down, too.
Yeah, the headship hits the iceberg. The other ones are like,
should we steer?
I mean, is anybody going to take the lead? No? All right, well, then I guess.
Nobody told me it was that kind of party, but I guess.
I guess.
But, I mean, will the iceberg float?
Yeah, Mike Dobb at Geeks Under the Influence at GOIPodcast.com for links to this show, other shows on the network, social media links, all that stuff. Rate, review, if you feel like it. And onto the content, we got a lot to discuss. Three seasons of show. Maybe we're going to stick to the third one. New Horizons, right? Is that the
New Horizons?
The subtitle of the show, which I love when it's the same show, but they add like a little thing, basically I would change networks or there's like a new person in it.
I bet you it had something to do where even though Fox canceled them, they were still like, no, if you do it this way, we're still going to take money. You know, I mean,
well, you know what? They did take money because I think this season had a much bigger budget than they have in the past. You could see that because whenever they did a big episode, they did a smaller episode next. But some of those episodes were huge.
Sure. The way they were able to, I mean, and it sounds typical, but if you remember season one in comparison to season three, like that, when they were off world or not doing just something on the bridge of the ship or just certain rooms on the ship. Shit was expansive. Like, I mean, it wasn't just like obviously a studio room that they built for that one scene. It was no CGI, all of it, you know, was used.
And they did some top end CGI.
Absolutely.
On the season,
too. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It wasn't like it was flaky special effects.
No, I mean,
either.
There were a couple moments, but I mean, with any TV series that is doing that much CGI, you expect to be way worse than an
episode. Oh, sure. Yeah.
I think they used the volume in that last episode. The volume, the room with the LED walls.
Oh, yeah.
That holodeck scene looked a little bit, or whatever they call that room.
I was about to say, that's going to be the biggest thing, is that you're not supposed to use Star Trek words, but you're so sitting there going, it's a holodeck. Call it a holodeck.
It's a fucking holodeck. It's not a reality simulator. Okay, it's a reality
simulator.
That's
like Shaun of the Dead when he calls him zombies. He's like, don't say that. Don't do it.
We're not using the
Do you
Zed
have a holodeck?
It wasn't what did he call the gun? They weren't phasers. They were some other, like,
probably quantum something.
It was the quantum drive instead of the warp drive, and also the comparisons are like mind numbing because you're so used to Star Trek, but you're like, no, I get it. You don't want to pay Paramount something either. Like, you know, you're already
so many things were literally like flip open the thesaurus and like choose the fourth word. That's what we're going with.
Yeah.
Then we all get it.
I mean, like, we're talking about like a Garfield Heathcliff kind of thing going on here.
Absolutely.
That's what it comes
down
to.
Except it's not Garfield Heathcliff, because Garfield and Heathcliff were both orange cats, but the vibe was different. The vibe is slightly askew.
Yeah.
That's true.
It's like it's Garfield in the comics where they Photoshop John out of the panels. Photoshop Garfield out of the panels. So it's just John slowly losing his mind and talking to himself. That's it.
And every comic still made sense.
Fair.
That is so true.
With New Horizons, besides it being, you know, a new platform on Hulu for the show, I feel like as much as they did a lot of this in the first two seasons, the gloves were way off on how much social commentary they were going to have in this series. I mean, like, they've had plenty before this, but, like, season three is rife with it. I mean, they're going so fucking hard in this
season. So I feel like that was part of their mandate all along, and it is interesting because the way they present social commentary is a really simplified view on whatever issue they're presenting. It's not the full gamut of the issue. It has a very liberal bent, which is pleasing, but in doing that, they ignore a lot of the other parts of the issues. But they came back around for a lot of that stuff. So they presented an issue, and then maybe a couple episodes later, they might come back around and present more.
Or even a later
flesh
season,
it out.
Too. Yeah.
Flesh it out a little bit.
Well, it's like
that.
It's like what you were talking about earlier, where, like, there's comments on social media and stuff where you make that comment about a post going, oh, but it's this way, and then new information comes up, and you're like, oh, wait, hold on. Let's go back to that subject, and this season did that perfectly.
Yeah.
It really did.
Yeah, it came back around, all I can say is it came full circle on so many great things.
The one that, and I'm sure it's the same for a lot of people, it, I think, was even the first season where it talked about the sex reassignment. Mm-hmm. For the what's the race, the
Mocklins.
The Mocklins. This entire race where everyone is male, and if you are it's rare that a female is born, but if they're born, they're reassigned as an infant as a male, and that's just so talk about I mean, it's the
because
classic Star Trek flipping it around and making it the opposite kind of thing, where like it is natural in this community to reassign sex to an infant against their, you know, without their choice,
knowledge,
and, without their knowledge. But it's still hitting the same conversation about like transgender rights and, and a person's body autonomy and to be able to have that conversation and do it so nuanced while still not hiding it one fucking bit.
Oh no, right. Straight. Oh, in your face about it.
TNG, like almost every episode, was prime directive. You don't interfere with a culture. Even if they're part of our union, the Federation, whoever they are, that's still their culture. That's still how they do things. But this show really touched on like, yeah, you guys are part of the union, but what? Wait a minute, what the fuck are you doing? How do you fight that without pissing off everybody? Which... see, but later
even
in season
Trek
three.
Had a line where it wasn't like going into like trans rights and shit. Just like it was something super heavy-handed, like they murder women that have red hair, you know, like something that oh, they shouldn't do that, you know. It's like,
oh, absolutely,
there's no argument.
But
about
we're
it.
Also talking about a show that happened 30 years prior.
Yeah, no, true,
so
true.
No, the whole presentation of the Mocklin thing is very like, as a through line. The Mocklin thing is very interesting. I didn't actually care for that first episode where they talked about the Mocklin culture because I thought it was too heavy-handed, but in coming back to that issue over and over again, it really developed it super well.
Well, it started with jokes about how they only urinate once a year and they have to go do this big ceremony to do it on the home planet.
Oh, right, yeah.
And all this stuff. Like it really like started making the culture sound very jokish, and all of a sudden they're like, we're all males. Oh, but what happens if there is a female that is born? And everybody kind of was like, hold on, what?
Oh, what?
Hold on.
Who?
You know?
Infant genital mutilation.
Yeah, it's like,
But one of the things that they did really well with that was like bringing up that this is part of this culture. And then in later episodes, when they were dealing with the Krill, was having Bordas, the Mocklin that's on the bridge, going like, why are we even going to consider allying with such a closed-minded race.
Right.
And everyone on the board was just like record scratched, like you're a Mocklin.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't the Krill, it was another group, but it was all female heavy, like for their classification and social structure. Yeah.
But yeah, it was one of those just like everyone on the bridge being like, you're in the union, but we don't agree with any of this.
Yeah.
Why are you saying this?
Yeah.
Well, and just like directly addressing it in that regard was like, that was an awesome thing to me.
Throughout that whole episode, Bordas, the main Mocklin, was just like, even he still made other comments later where you're just like, you know, it's serious, but at the same time, you're like, hey, I see the hypocrisy. And that was kind of the joke.
Or arc is definitely one of my favorites because of, like Tandy said, how they followed up with it and really smoothed it out and gave it a little bit more parameters on and more story to really flesh it out.
Mm-hmm.
But watching the breakdown of that relationship between Bordas and his spouse.
Clyden. Oh, man. Was the worst
ever, and just so hyper-reactionary and shitty, but also like he aligned more with the Mocklin ideal than Bordas did. So,
which was more messed up because the character was also like
was reassigned.
Was supposed to be reassigned at birth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What was it? Yeah. You find out Clyden was reassigned as well. Clyden, he was Clyden actually was born female.
No, but that's the beauty of it is that it 100% touching on the idea that hyper conservative people that secretly live lives that are different than what they tend to preach, basically. Like whether it be giving abortions to their mistresses or tapping on a shoe at the airport.
That was the one. Yeah.
They're like, you can't do this. No, this bullshit. And it's because they're so scared of their own identity or their own like their own personal feelings about it that
it's the self guilt. Like where they say in a relationship where like you start blaming your partner for like, oh, are you sure you're not cheating? When a lot of those times where it's a mental thing of where your partner did something to bring up that guilt and they're redirecting it at the wrong person.
It's projection. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for having trouble with that one word. Yes, thank you.
It's a whole rainbow of dynamic of presentation built off of these archetypes that are straight from the Next Generation. So you've got Bordas for Mr. Worf and you have...
Directly.
Yeah.
Oh, what's the robot dude's name?
Isaac.
Yeah, yeah, the Kalons, Data. Which I was about to bring up as well. The whole thing with the Kalons too is a where they kind of oversect on a few things as well. But I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, but you have these archetypes to build off of, and it builds off of those really well, developing them in their own direction, but also building on a foundation that kind of exists in your mind. It's kind of like a shortcut to getting there.
Oh, yeah. They don't have to do as much legwork as the initial series had.
Absolutely.
To, for sure. Yeah.
They even had a Tasha Yar situation, which I thought was very interesting, where they had
Except I don't hate this character that's fucking the robot. Like everybody hated Tasha Yar.
No. Like, I wasn't talking about that. I was talking about having the super strong...
The security officer that had to go away after the first first season.
And they replaced her.
Also with Tasha Yar, she got killed by a puddle of goo.
Yeah, she got killed by a puddle of
goo. And this one fucked a puddle of goo in the Orville. So.
That's true. That is so true. Does anybody know why the original security person left? Why that, I forget her name. She was only in the first
the young, the younger one.
Younger.
Yeah, she had
I believe they justified it because, it was gravity sickness because she
I know the show reason. But was there any reason why the actress was no longer on the show?
She wouldn't fuck Seth MacFarlane. I don't know. I don't know. Not starting any rumors.
Right.
I don't.
The TUI network has been crushed by the strong hand of Seth MacFarlane.
Right.
Doesn't exist anymore.
You get an angry text from Mike Henry, bro. No, dude, I'm sorry.
Fuzzy Door Productions cease and desist notice on the door, Shit. No, I was just always curious, and I was bad about not Googling it, basically, on why she was no longer on the show. I mean, she came back for the final episode as a cameo. Yeah, that was a nice twist.
That was a really nice touch.
Yeah. Yeah. But I was going to say that what I love is the jokes also being made, or I kind of made the joke to my wife about where the chief medical officer who has the relationship with Isaac, the robot, what is it with her being on sci-fi shows and marrying a main character that has all these issues? Because she was on DS9 and married Captain Sisko, who was the emissary for the Bajorans.
Was she?
Yeah,
I just found that out the other day, actually.
Wait, was she the freighter runner?
Yeah, she was the freighter captain.
Holy shit, I didn't realize
nobody,
that was the same actress.
I'm the only one that knew that?
Dude,
I didn't know that.
The only thing I remembered her from was being the captain on Castle.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot she was on that.
All I remembered her from was just being like the hard-ass bitch of just like constantly putting Nathan Fillion in place.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, no, I'm holding up for
there's
an
total sci-fi. Yeah. Well, you got to remember that I also watched DS9 to go to sleep at night. I've seen that whole series
multiple times.
I haven't
rewatched
it
since I finally finished the series, but which has been a few years now.
But she plays, Cassidy Yates on DS9.
Cassidy Yates, that's right, yeah. Holy shit.
Okay. And then a little extra sci-fi is, of course, Scott Grimes, who, what's his character's name? I'm blanking.
He's Malloy. Gordon Malloy.
Malloy, who was from the first two Critters movies.
You know what he also does?
Was he? Shit.
Yes.
That's awesome.
He's the voice of Steve Smith on...
That's right. That is right. That's You are correct, sir.
On American Dad.
That.
I love that he's clearly got to be friends with Seth MacFarlane, because it's like, oh, we got... some downtime. Give him an acoustic guitar. Let's do a jam.
Yeah, we definitely noticed that this season. It was there's three episodes where it's just okay, Malloy's just jamming.
Motherfucker released an EP this season, right?
Yeah, basically. Well, and also, I believe my wife informed me, I didn't verify, but apparently he is also married to Adrian Pilecki, who plays Kelly Grayson.
Good for him.
Scott Grimes? Right?
Good for him.
Damn good for him.
Yeah.
Right?
She also looks like she's probably a foot and a half taller than him. So
I am betting so.
Yeah.
Because I remember she went through...
the mountain.
She also comes from sci-fi as well. I mean, her first big thing was Friday Night Lights, but she was on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for a few seasons.
She had that Wonder Woman pilot that never came out.
That's true, right. Too. Yeah. Damn, I forgot about that. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad.
Now, another thing that I do is that it makes complete sense, because we're now dealing with a universe where humankind not only has to deal with each other and racial shit has just disappeared like in humankind, because there's like literal aliens that you're working with. Right. And also the idea of like dating or fucking an alien is totally fine, except for like the mechanisms on how that works, which I love they dealt with, where
just
it's like,
it to the holodeck.
I might die during fucking, if we could, like,
that, it's ruining. Lamar banging out the chick that was just like breaking him
super
every
strong.
Time.
And like his face at the end, that where they do the final breakup, and like you can hardly recognize his face.
Oh, he's
and,
like beaten almost to death.
And just trying to make excuses every time. You're like, I just keep going to the combat simulator.
That's why it makes sense that there is no winking whatsoever, no commentary about it whatsoever. Everyone is kind of gay. Like, like there's that dude that Adrian Pilecki, Commander Grayson, cheated on Seth MacFarlane with that shows up later.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh,
then he ends up seducing both of them. And they're both fucking him, and it's because he has this pheromone, and he's like, oh, I kind of get it now. But also, like, yeah, I mean, I fucked him,
oh,
too.
Oh, that's when the doctor hooked up with Norm MacDonald on that episode.
Yeah, Norm MacDonald as well. Is that everybody's fucking everybody, and there's no wink about, like, oh, you fucked a dude? There's just like, oh, I mean, just there's no...
I mean, like, hell was it? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Have some wine about it.
There's no weirdness about it. There's no, like, oh, I thought you were straight. No comments on it whatsoever. Everybody's just, like, getting theirs, having a good time.
It's very fluid and sometimes literal.
Literally fluid sometimes.
Yeah, but I wanted to, actually, you just reminded me about that. Let's raise a glass to Norm MacDonald, who unfortunately passed away after season two. And I thought that was such a nice touch where he just had to talk into a microphone for that character. And it's one of the best characters, I think. But you notice they didn't use him as much in season
Not nearly three. As much, yeah.
Yeah.
But they did dedicate a lot of this to him. On
they
that.
Did. Yeah. They did, absolutely. Which was perfect.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
It was well done. I mean, the Yoffit was 100% Norm MacDonald.
Sure, yeah.
Like, let's just make it a little bit awkward.
Yeah.
But it's slime.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, no, that works.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, that works a little bit. Better than tall and goofy.
Yeah.
True. Very, very true.
Now, the two main themes that I got from this season that they were really coming back to and over and over again is, like, cultural expectation and parentage was a constant theme through this season. And then also about, like, morality, where moral lines lie when you're dealing with multiple, species and cultures.
Oh, yes. I actually feel like the so they did one of those episodes. One of the last episodes was directly about the Prime Directive, and that was interesting
that's
to me
Star
because
Trek
I,
talk.
Yeah,
that's
but
Star Trek
that's
talk.
Because it's something super generic on the Orville.
This was called the main thesis, I think, is what this is.
Sure, right.
But the main thesis does not work. Like as they present it, it doesn't really work because it only works in a closed system. If you're not considering that there are other races who will come to this planet and either destroy it or bring it on with their technology to their level as part of their alliance. There's mm-hmm. so many X factors in there that the in practical application,
right?
The Prime Directive main thesis does not really work, and I never thought about that until that episode.
Well, 2 points. I mean, I totally thought, well, I mean, we could really make this, depending on how we talk about it, make it a crossover episode for the Geek Fathers. Because I was thinking that as, like, especially by the last couple episodes, it was like, there is some heavy duty. I mean, besides the Mocklin stuff, there is heavy duty parenting stuff.
Like, Seth MacFarlane fucked a krill. Like,
yeah.
And he made a krill human baby. Like,
yeah. Well, and then the politics behind that of that baby could have united them.
Which, as we know,
but,
with horses and was it like donkeys that,
sterile,
that,
yeah.
that she's sterile. Yeah. She's definitely
right.
a sterile.
True. But she could have united them, is the point.
Yeah.
But it would have destroyed their religious foundations.
Right.
Actually, because of their culture. She would not have united him. They would have killed her.
They would have murdered the fuck out of her.
Oh, yeah. Well, a possible uniting.
Like
that
Trump allegory episode was pretty hardcore, and it just...
Oh, yeah, it was.
Yeah, but it. I thought, actually, this show, going to the second part, what you were just saying, was how the Star Trek talk of the Prime Directive, it really gave a good bounce back on it's not always ideal, but you know why it's there. You know, like Star Trek really never gave a good explanation on their Prime Directive other than if you watch that really shitty show called Enterprise that was supposed to be the prequel to all the shit.
Is that the Bon Jovi one?
Yeah, for the intro song. Yeah.
They've got instrumental fucking intros besides the and they're like, you know what we need? Fucking some Jersey love. That's what we need for fucking Star Trek.
But what they essentially establish, restaurant owning,
Bush rock and roll.
But what they established with that series for the whole Star Trek universe was the prime directive was basically the Vulcans telling them, don't do this. Not a necessarily a rhyme or reason, but because the Vulcans were more experienced. The Vulcans were just said, don't do it. And that was their whole reason on why they even had a prime directive. Not the experience, which I thought was great in that. Was it the last episode where Grayson shows the one girl about like, well, this is what happens mm-hmm. when we gave somebody our technology, you know.
That's great.
It shows the both, you know, it actually gave that checks and balance to things where it's not always perfect. They definitely try to fight some shit in Orville about it, but they were still part of the union and had to do what they had to do. So I thought that was a great.
Right. Like I really appreciated that so much of like laying it out there of like, this is why we actually don't do it. We have record of why we don't do this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was kind of surprised that they didn't actually put in there somewhere about how one of the other races hadn't come across a slightly less advanced race before they had gotten enlightened and taken advantage of that to their own, for their own purposes. Like, yeah. I was kind of surprised they didn't do that.
Well, you know, it's also coming from pre-existing nerd philosophy. Both the Watchers in the 1960s, I think this was established, interfered with a race that destroyed themselves, which is why the Watchers had their non-interference vow. But also, the Skrull gave the Kree, who were like in caveman state, their technology, and in under 100 years, the Kree became this super aggressive galactic empire,
right?
Because the Skrull shared their technology with the Kree.
Well, and all the prime directive in Star Trek is meant to do is to be like the card being like, yeah, you see it on social media all the time. It's like, well, I'm not one of those whites. It's because like if we were looking at the prime directive as far as like the settling of the United States, like somebody other than the Union is going to roll in and give them like pox blankets and liquor and be like, have fun with shit that you don't have any experience dealing with before and have no like understanding of. Hope it doesn't ruin your society.
Yeah, we'll come back in a year and find your empty camp.
Yeah, and then we'll just build a building on it. That it's would definitely, like Tony was saying earlier, there'd be people with more nefarious plans for that community of like, well, they have minerals we need, so I guess
and it also kind of gave an excuse to walk away from some of the earlier ones that were just used as plot devices because like, ah, they'd be protected by plot armor, so it's like, oh no, the no one's going to mess stuff, with them until they're actually on our level, so it gave an excuse to be able to do one-offs with it.
Yeah,
so it was a plot device tool that they had to justify somehow.
It's also a plot so you could do like a Ren Faire episode with Data because they're in like the fucking old-timey world with people that wear trash bags for clothes.
Well, and then one group that we've kind of mentioned is even the Krill, who's the opposite of where, because of their heavy religious hand.
Yeah, because they're zealots.
And there's the zealots and zealotness, if you will.
Zealotry.
There you go. Thank you.
Zealotositude, I think.
Sure. But the way their society is built is that they're actually more mirror, of course, of the early Klingon versions, where they're just so like very warlike, but they're so set in their ways that an outsider of any other race is like, no, not going to happen. But our goal is to still take over as much as we can because that's what our gods told us to do.
It was just Amos instead of honor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, and the reflection was
like, man, rental cars are that, you know, doing that much for you.
Like, so much of this, especially this season, so much of it
well done.
Has that feeling of like, honestly, me hanging out in Nick and Terry's garage, where we're dealing with like the world on fucking fire and people that are just like the worst possible versions of human existence that are out there in the world, just fucking tweeting away like it's okay.
And all we do is roast it until 4 a.m.
And then we're just sitting there, and that's like the moments where like, Adrian Pilecki goes into Seth MacFarlane's like office and she's like, you need a drink? Like, God, yes. And they're like, fuck, man. Like, what the fuck? And they're like, Mocklins and fucking robot people.
You put that shit away.
Like, there's such that level of like that level of like the right balance of logic and empathy that a person like aspires to have in their life, where it's not all Kalon logic, but it's not all emotion, and finding that balance. And those that's them in the office being like, oh fuck, like I can't, we can't just kill them, but Jesus Christ, right. Such a headache.
Like, sir, yeah. Do you honestly believe that? No, I think it's going to be a disaster. However.
Yep.
Everyone deserves a chance, I guess. Even that fucking red hat wearing Mocklin over there.
I was just going to say that the moment that you just missed, audience, was Nick putting the fuel for the Malortian core squarely on the table. And just the visual pain that causes by its very existence.
Yes, very true.
Like, I'm blind.
There's always more in my house somehow. There's always
this warp core was built in Chicago, apparently.
Right.
Holy shit.
Fucking hell.
Ugh.
But I also thought it was a nice touch to where, as campy and jokey as Seth MacFarlane's character has been, like especially in the first couple seasons, this one he had to make a couple of the hard calls that he haphazardly did before, but this one he sat there and was like, no, we are the Union, this is our ship, this is how it's run, it's either going to be this way or that, like it, like almost that whole like I'm have to make that black or white call.
He's full captain this season.
It's
also like that man has the tiniest eyeballs I've ever seen on a human fucking person. Like it's like and they don't bug out or anything, but also like the slits of eyelid that exist that hold the eyes in are so tiny compared to like the ridged head. He's not like Ted Danson level, which that's a different conversation we need to have as well.
I was about to say special guest, yes.
But like,
yes,
man,
yes.
The tiniest fucking... I've never in my life considered a person's eyeball size before, but yeah, holy shit.
Now, as someone with tiny rat eyes myself... yeah, Seth MacFarlane has rodent eyes, and it's creepy, but it also makes for a very weird performance because... he's a vocal performer, so a lot of his performance is in his voice, but his face doesn't do a lot of stuff because he's got those itty-bitty eyeballs.
He's got a fantastic voice, and he's got a great cadence. He knows how to make his voice really boom when it needs to.
Yeah.
And then, beep, little fucking eyeball, little doll eyes.
On that note, one of the jokes that I appreciated the most was when they were going through the simulations of different ways to experience death and be like, Malloy had to go up to Bordas and be like, tell her she has a five head.
Also, I need to know how much fucking spirit gum is in that ginger's beard, because I've never seen a ginger that can rock a beard as well as Malloy does.
That's true. Like,
gingers have the patchy at best beards. They don't have good, well fucking manicured beards like that.
No.
I'm looking at you. Stop that.
I'm barely ginger at best.
Yeah, he just has a hint.
When you're out in the summer more, it comes more red.
Look, I'm about
you just spent too much time inside this summer.
Should we give Carlton a call? Do we need to call Carlton?
Yeah, Carlton has a patchy fucking beard,
yeah,
too.
That's, right. That's what I mean. Like,
he's bringing his TV game. I mean, it's his TV game. What are you going to do? You're not gonna be on like a show with starched uniforms and plush couches in your spaceship and then roll up in there with a patchy beard.
And then a ratty couch stoner beard.
can I say...
Rogaine has...
He rolls up wearing a Windhand t-shirt and a fucking ratty beard with like Cheetos in it or something.
Something we got to bring up more is definitely how they mess with Bordas, because he is so like beeline on how he works in the world. But you can never beat Bordas with a mustache.
Bordas with a mustache wins every time.
Bordas with a mustache. Done and done right there.
No, that one was pretty epic.
That was fantastic.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Especially everyone else being like, I didn't think you could even grow a mustache.
Well, you did the surgical. Like,
yeah.
The doctor made hair grow. I'm like, none of you have hair.
Yeah.
You just elected that was where you were going to grow hair for the
Well, I mean, if you're going to talk about nobody can beat Bordas, Bordas's porn addiction. They did an episode about porn addiction.
They did do a porn addiction episode.
Yes, that is so true.
God, that... Yeah, that,
God.
No, That was the best representation of
Greasy Mocklin.
Like that was the best representation of what would actually happen to holodecks.
That's a great episode name, is Greasy Mocklin.
Well, that's what I love about DS9 for Star Trek. They totally alluded to more of what holo suites were actually used for at Quark's.
Right, because Quark actually had like the illegal programs. We know you were just
not even illegal. It's like just if you're looking for a sense of relief.
Man, DS9 people were fucking computer ghosts. Like that was just
that's
a thing.
True too.
But also vascular Greasy Mocklins.
yes, big old muscly beefy boys. Speaking of which, these beefy boys need to take a break so we could use the bathroom and get a few more boozes in us before the second half. So stick around, listen to some of the other shows on the network. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the Orville, what we're drinking, maybe do a drunken scene or two. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Coming straight from the mouths of madness, I'm Lowdown.
I'm F.U. Hunter.
Do you love horror?
We fucking do.
So this is a podcast dedicated to all things in cinematic horror. We're talking movies, television, composers, special effects artists. We're going to fucking cover it.
So if you love horror,
embrace the madness.
My name is Amy Bogard.
And I'm Mike the Hobbit.
And we are the hosts of Deeply Upsetting, where we use our expertise to answer your most upsetting hypothetical quandaries, such as, what non-wiggin animal deserves wings?
And what body part deserves a secret mouth?
Which cryptid is the worst roommate?
These questions and more that plague you will be answered on Deeply Upsetting, available anywhere you get your podcasts and at GUIpodcast.com.
In a world of blockbuster movies, there is another dimension.
The dimension of schlock cinema. Join us at Beautiful Disasters on a journey into the fringe territory of B-movie abandon.
We review the flicks that are forgotten or underappreciated to give them a proper place in the annals of celluloid history.
I'm the Groots.
F.U. Hunter.
Your guides at Beautiful Disasters. Come along with us for a fun ride.
May the schlock be with you.
In a world with too many reboots and remakes,
two men will stop at nothing to make it even worse.
Join Mike the Hobbit and Tondi as they play by their own rules while pitching new takes on some of your favorite and least favorite films and TV shows. What podcast would dare to bring this upon the world?
This is Smack My Pitch Up.
Hey guys, Scotty P here with Smash.
On your left.
And we are
the Geek Fathers.
That's right, bringing all the trials and tribulations of being a geeky parent.
So welcome to our world.
And as always, join us
or cry.
We are back for the second half of all things The Orville, New Horizons, I guess, and all the previous seasons that were, I guess, is that The Old Horizons? Is that
it's the previously on
previous horizons
the Orville previously on
previously on Orville.
That works.
Episode. season 3 of the Orville and previous seasons as well. But before we get into that, let's talk about our sponsors a little bit. Pew pew pew. We're talking about Amazon.com that will hopefully be destroyed by the time we reach the period of time that the Orville takes place in, because they've gotten rid of predatorial corporations.
We need replicators.
But for now, if you want to shop a predatorial corporation, then make sure you do it through the link at GUIpodcast.com. Click on the Shop Amazon tab. That way, some of your money comes to us instead of the monster that is Amazon, that is destroying all things that we love and know in humanity. The faceless monster.
The krill to our existence.
The krill to our existence. Yes. Or Kalon.
There you go. Yeah, I'll take Kalon.
Nobody can tell me that Jeff Bezos isn't a fucking robot.
True.
At this point.
Yeah.
Amazon.com, the place you go to when you don't have morals, do it through our link so we get money. I don't care.
It's just that I needed a steamer. Yeah. I needed a steamer this week, and I needed it quickly. So.
Look, I understand. Sometimes your pillow is flat, and you're having trouble sleeping, and you're like, I can't get to Bed Bath & Beyond this week. But you can order it on Amazon. So it's your secret. We'll keep it a secret for you. We're not going to tell anybody.
Honestly, we're not checking who does the actual.
Treat Amazon.com like Republican politicians treat the abortion clinic for their mistresses, and do it secretly. And we will keep that secret for you.
I would stand up, but that's too difficult right now.
But the trade-off is that you've got to use our link for us to stay quiet about it. So this is blackmail for all our listeners. We're going to tell everybody about the fucking really, really like basic, you're better than that. You should have better sex toys than this shit that you're buying on Amazon. If Truth. You don't use our link. So I don't know who to find out about it. But, you know, we'll figure that part out later. Amazon.com. Ping. Yeah.
Ping.
That'll be on TV soon. The next sponsor actually is TeePublic, which is the preferred method in which that you you support the show. We've been using TeePublic for 4 years, 4 or 5 years, something like that.
Yeah, at least. At this
point.
Yeah.
We have close to 50 designs on the website at this point. Just recently released a, you know, the shirts where it has and? It's like Steve and Jane and blah, blah, blah. But we did that with the 7 words you can't say on television from George Carlin. So it's shit, piss, fuck. Tits, motherfucker, cocksucker.
Oh, I'm awesome. So getting that coffee mug. Yeah, I am getting that coffee mug.
That's the thing. A few people have been like, that's great. Not getting it as a shirt, but a coffee mug sounds great. Like, imagine going to, like, fucking Krispy Kreme, and you're walking in, and you're wearing, like, the 7 words. I could see, like, a dismayed mother being like, oh, no, like, my children.
My wife needs that, but I know she's going to actually realize it's on sale before I can buy it for her. And then I'd be like, fuck, now we got 2 of them. And then we're just going to be looking at each other with disdain in the morning.
Like, well, the Geek Father Dilemma is where you get that shirt and then you're wearing it, doing your thing, and then you're like, oh, I got to run up to the school for something. Whoops.
Yeah, I'm just drinking out of your cocksucker mug. Yeah.
No, I'm talking about the shirt even.
Oh, the shirt,
like,
yeah.
Like, you just wear the shirt and you're just like, oh.
Oh, I have to make those choices where there's been multiple times I've had to change my shirt before a video call. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
So,
yep.
I had to get rid of one that just said, I fucked your boyfriend when my kids started going to school, because I normally just grab whatever's on the top of the clean pile, and I was like, I can't go to the kindergarten wearing a shirt that says, I fucked your boyfriend.
That's what I mean. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, let them know who you are right off the bat.
TeePublic.com.
TeePublic, no, I fucked your boyfriend.
GUIpodcast.com/store to get the link to our TeePublic page. And yeah, we've got close to 50 designs at this point. There's going to be over 50 designs very soon because we're getting into Halloween spooky season.
Yes.
So the end of August is when we release those limited time designs for the spooky season. So keep an eye out for that. And we'll be adding some new ones as well.
And unfortunately, Geek Fathers has had, because of what's been happening with our episodes, the unfortunate hiatus of Kyle, some of our designs have been put on hold as well. We were hoping to have them by summer. It might be fall time. But
yeah, I have a feeling we're going to end up dropping a bunch of new designs coming fall.
Yeah.
Are you still taking design submissions?
Absolutely. Yeah. Good. Thank you, Tondi. We have the KISS program. our lips program. That's what it is. I forget what
it
stands
for. You just
want
smooches.
Yeah. I just want smooches from our listeners. It's basically the way it works. If you submit a design from any of the shows, reference to some dumb shit we done, or a play on the logo, feel free to touch base with us. If you want just a nice high-res version of our logo that you want to incorporate into something, just touch base with us, geeksunderTheInfluence@gmail.com, and we'll send you out that template. I might throw that on the drive, actually, just so that's easier to get.
Yeah.
And trust me, if we like it, we'll be sporting that shit, too.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll buy that shit. Yeah. But also, if you're submitting some designs to us, playing with our logo, putting your own spin on it, having some fun with it, we're going to send you merch with that design on it for free.
Yeah.
Like, you just get some.
Truth.
As well as our, like, accolades and love on the episodes about how fucking cool it is.
Show us what you can do.
Yeah.
That's right.
And it's a low bar. Like, if you put stick figures and then you just, like, draw GUI in your own human blood, there would, no. Well, maybe. But probably not.
The kind of scared where, yes, you would definitely get something.
Depending on what it actually is, from the Mouse of Madness could probably use it.
Yeah, true. Okay, yeah. We have the right to refuse to put that on our TeePublic page, but it's not a very high bar. If it's fun, if we like it, we'll put it up. It's not going to be, it's not that, we're not gatekeeping too hard on our designs.
Nah.
Someone's going to submit a Cyanide and Happiness comic just because of that now.
Right. Oh, that's another thing is, like, don't submit other people's shit, please. Don't put us in that position.
If you want to hear the shows, if you want the shows to continue, then don't make us.
Yeah, please.
We already had that whole discussion on copyright earlier. Yeah, we don't need that. No.
So now we're getting into the thing that really keeps the juices moving on this show.
Juice.
The juice, of this show. We're talking about what we're drinking.
Hey, we're fucking drinking. We're getting drunk. You want to know? Well, here you go. Hey!
We're drinking. We're getting drunk.
My favorite.
Yeah, that was super necessary to have the Bo version because Vale just played at Browns Island in Richmond. And it was the precipice of Richmond moments because Vale is like the Richmond punk band. And they were playing on Browns Island, which is literally on the James. And they have a song called Scuffletown where they sing about like over the James. And as that's happening, Tim, the singer, he's a huge train nerd. And as they're playing and we're next to the James, a train rolls by and just starts laying on the horn. And the conductor puts his hands out and starts giving like the metal sign.
Yeah.
Just laying on the horn.
That's awesome.
And the whole crowd is like, wow. Because they know. And Tim, I'm pretty sure, came on stage when that happened.
It was the culmination of Richmond at that moment. Like, you felt that energy everywhere. For
yeah,
sure.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it was great. It was great.
Peak Richmond moment for sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thanks to Bo for joining us on an episode and letting us record that. So,
yeah.
But yeah, like what we're drinking, we've got some choices. Tani, if you want to take us through what we're sipping on here.
So, as a theme beverage, I wanted to do a Romulan ale. It just came to me and stuck in my mind. And so I looked up recipes for Romulan ale.
Ooh.
But there's no one recipe for Romulan ale. It's just a blue drink. And some of them were like blue motorcycles, and some of them had like frothed egg, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
So I didn't go for any of those recipes.
Thank you.
I just made a thing. Taste it. Let me know what you think is in there.
Man, that tastes blue.
Yeah.
It does taste blue, but what I do appreciate is that most of the blue drinks that I've had in my time are super sweet. Mm-hmm. And though there is a little bit of sweetness, it's not that sweet.
It's not overpowering.
No. There's a funk to it, though. I'm wondering where that's coming from.
I'm going to say vodka is probably your main alcohol.
No.
What?
I'm definitely going to say there's some triple sec in this.
Oh, there's a lot of blue curacao. There's no triple sec, but there's a lot of blue curacao. Okay.
Which is the blue version of triple sec. Yeah, it's same thing.
Well, the blue maker.
It's got that like nice strong like blue citrus flavor. Going to it.
Yeah. So we've got some blue curacao. We have some Parrot Bay Tropical Rum.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Date rape.
We have some Q Hibiscus Ginger Beer.
Ah, the ginger beer. That's where the funk.
That's where
that extra tingly that I'm getting. Yeah, man.
And then a lot of lemon juice, actually.
I'm not going to lie. I really like this.
Yeah, it's not bad. Like that ginger beer, that funky element that the ginger beer brings actually kind of levels things out a little bit. It's not a bad choice.
This is definitely the drink, though, where you're going to be drinking and, like, I'm going to stand up here if I have too much and be like, oops, and, like, probably fall.
Oops.
Are we recording?
Like, I'm normally, like, a real whiskey and shitty beer kind of dude, and, like, I would drink that shit for breakfast hungover.
Hair of the dog here with my Cheerios
just like put caffeine in this and give it to me at 8 a.m.
fuck yes.
So actually this is what Mike was saying. This is super sweet. It's not sweet right now because I kept tasting it and I was like, man, this is so sweet. More lemon juice, but then just shaking it with the ice, basically the water cut it.
So. Yeah. So. No, and fair. No, that's thank you.
This is delicious. Thank you.
But this was, well, and I get where you come from on this, because that was the whole thing on the original series of Star Trek was their whole, like, I mean, let's face it. Most of these sci-fi shows have alcoholism in them, period. Whether how hidden it is when they're in their dialogue, but it was always Romulan ale where it was just like, oh man, a heavy moment hit in Star Trek. Even like the when Spock died, the big thing that they were drinking was the Romulan ale. It was illegal,
Klingon blood wine.
Well, that was later though,
because in the
that was way later, like DS9. But I'm talking about OG, like the movies, the original series. It was always Romulan ale because even though it was illegal, it was still that like no. Shit's heavy right now. We need something like this.
Yeah, because official Federation beverages were synthahol, which didn't actually get you drunk.
Yeah. Well, they
bullshit if you ask me.
They did change that later where synth ales and stuff did get you drunk. It was just how it was made.
Uh-huh.
It was replicator made ales.
And they had a way to immediately counteract all the negative effects.
Right.
As opposed to the Orville, where we have red wine and scotch.
That's right.
All the damn time. Yes.
Yeah. The, like, I'm glad they got around not having to pay a sponsor in the Orville, where they had the metal bottles, and you're like, yep, that's probably the shittiest beer, but it's still good. You know?
But speaking of beer, we have something that is not the shittiest beer.
I've not had a chance to taste this yet, but this is definitely one of the more expensive beers that I bought in recent time.
The name.
Boutique beer making, I understand it takes a lot to can and distribute when you're a small distributor, so I'm actually not shitting on that. This is Kings County Brewing Collective out of Brooklyn, New York. This is called Krill Bill Volume 2. Not the same Krill as the Orville.
The can is really awesome.
It's a prawn-like head on the bride's body. Yeah. And this is a double IPA, which is not normally my go-to, but this can was so perfect that I couldn't not get it for
true.
This.
This can is amazing.
Yeah.
And that's 8% ABV.
Really? Or is that just the Tondi Ale?
It might be post Tondi Ale. I'm not sure, but like that's not.
I mean,
bad.
If that's the case, and mix that shit. Fuck it.
8% alcohol.
Oh fuck! For an IPA,
that's I very would drink yeah.
I mean, I think you take a taste of this and like
that is not a hoppy IPA.
There's like if that is such. I wouldn't thing. Call it a malty beer, but like there's enough malt to balance out the
right.
The, bitterness from the hop. Like yeah. That's surprisingly good for something that is not normally my style of beer. Fuck, man.
Right?
I don't need to like a beer this expensive.
Right. See, now I'm wondering if like I'm missing some of the shit from that would normally hit like the back of my taste buds because I was drinking Malort.
They're no longer like, there.
Well, so you're just numb just anyways in the face, like, you know.
But,
it's,
yeah.
But no,
yeah.
That's delicious.
Yeah, that's really tasty.
If I had to choose an IPA, that would be one. I mean, I'm not a big IPA person, but there are a couple out there that are not bad.
Well, you know what?
That one is mighty tasty.
I was annoyed at a 4-pack that cost as much as that did, but like that's a really it's 16 ounces too. Like they are.
They're tall boys.
They're tall boys.
Yeah.
But man, that's really good for something I don't like. The fact that I'm drinking a double IPA and enjoying it almost makes it the price worth it.
Probably yeah. was scared he was going to have double IPA around, but it sounds like he's not going.
No,
to have
probably not.
Double this IPA
is,
around.
Wow, this is no, really
that,
good.
That's actually solid. And like you know me, I drink shitty American light beer.
Amen,
every
sir.
Time. Yeah. Like the craft stuff. Like it's for some people, not for me. No, that's fucking delicious.
That's delightful. Yeah. So
hell yeah,
all right,
so, yeah.
Well, there's other cans like this is mine.
Fair.
You can enjoy.
Well, I just went with my traditional Richmond Lager for that's usually the fanciest I get.
That's
lately,
what I was drinking on the whole time that when Scotty and I were watching the bail.
That's right, same here.
Woo! Well, that's also on the table if anyone would like it.
Oh, the Malort.
The Malort. Yeah.
And at this like, point, no, because I'm having the Tondi Ale. I have the Richmond Lager, and then if I really want something to go the 8% on the double IPA, I'm good.
Yeah, the
I'm
engines good. Can they take the strain? The engines can they yeah. take
can't
the strain?
Take it anymore?
Let's get back into the content here. So we are talking about the Orville, and I really want to dig in a little bit more into the Kalon Wars.
The Kalon.
And Isaac, and I thought it was so brilliant how they were able to have a conversation about what it does mean to be a entity, like a self-realized person, where the Kalon, when you first meet them outside of Isaac, really aren't considered as like living, really. They're this like hive mind robot race
or
kind of thing.
Right.
Individualist at all. And that's the thing is that that's also broached is like, do you have to be an individual to be seen as an entity worth saving, or are hive minded entities also considered, you know, worth like, protecting as well. That is
and
part of the conversation.
And that was actually broached.
Yeah. Well, and we're probably going to jump all over the place as we do with this. But the whole thing, like Tondi had already mentioned, that like this is the ultimate mirror to Data from TNG, which is you have a robot who is all of a sudden is experiencing, we'll say for the sake of human emotion or emotion and things that normally his race as artificial intelligence do not have. And that was building since what? More so since season 2, I want to say. They really didn't do much in season 1 with the emotional stuff.
Well, it was about connection. It's not about emotion, which sometimes doesn't quite make sense to how Isaac gets to the places he gets. It's for the convenience of the
plot,
right, plot yeah. or whatever. But it's about connection. He has somehow established a connection that is beyond emotion with the crew of the Orville. They are his unit, whatever that means under the circumstances. It was the connection to the Doctor's children, or the Doctor's youngest son. He's
still using, like, the, as we would say, as well we know in Star Trek, the Vulcan mindset, very logical, very pragmatic. But something obviously had changed. But I think what season three gave us, though, again, to jump around a little bit, because it, like, when we're talking about this, like, the mind is just flowing, is that we finally got the actual full history of the Kalon as well.
Which was great.
That was great.
They finally gave the big explanation of, like, they always kind of hinted at stuff, but they actually gave, and like you kind of sit there and go, no, I get it. You know, at one point, like, with the Kalon, you're like, I understand, but man, hold on.
But it'd be like the heart-wrenching part of that was like exposing that the people that ran the company knew that since they gave them some level of AI, there was going to be some pushback. They didn't just make smart Roombas.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And they were like, well, yeah, people died, but we're making a profit. So do we recall?
What are you going to do?
Are we reflecting on real life? Maybe.
You know what I liked about that episode? Well, that whole history of the Kalon was really interesting. But they showed that the pushback was such that the Kalon butler killed that whole family.
Yeah.
They made that a part of the
thing. Oh, murdered the fuck out of that family.
The kids had gone fucking sadistic as shit on it. Just be like, you know what's going to be funny? Watching this sentient being get hurt.
It's reflected in, like, families at the turn of the century going to basically murder picnics. And taking pictures with people lynchings. Hanging in the background.
Yeah. And it was perfectly, like, you know, you, of course, hope for that the kids will learn that that's not the way, but the impressions of what the parents do, again, geek father moment here on the flagship show, is like you're sitting there going, don't be a dick. Your kids are seeing what they're doing, and they showed the perfect example of, dude, those kids were, like, ruthless when they were showing that scene. And I'm just sitting there going, that's heart-wrenching, man, because you know the reflection in real life in comparison to that.
Well, I mean, that is the perfect example of why sci-fi is so important, why genre content is so important, is because it separates us enough from the story that's being told and puts it in fantastical elements that separates it enough that we're able to consume it in a way that's palatable.
That we're not immediately going to be like, yuck. That's because full of sugar.
The idea of these children
or
treating their butler with such level of literally torturing it. There are so many different experiences and even recent experiences of human existence that have that kind of justification. They're not really human. They're not really real. And so I can treat them like that.
It takes away the, like, well, if you were there, you would have gotten why this was happening. It's like, no, like, look at it like you weren't there. Just straight to the point. This is what was happening. There's no justification for this.
Ultimately, these sci-fi shows, the moral that it gets down to is the idea that if there is a creature, alien, human, whatever, that is able to have personhood, has an awareness of oneself, even if it is part of a hive mind, if it has an individualism within that hive mind where it feels pain, it feels, or doesn't feel pain, it feels reactions to information that it's getting, that is enough justification to give it the same kind of protections that every other species would have. And that's something that's been lacking in every single step of human history, is the idea that if you exist, you deserve protection.
Of some kind.
That everybody needs the same level of protection. And it's been something that we fought against and for the entirety of human existence. And we still are. And that's what's fucking mind-boggling. And that's the thing that these shows point out, is that as far as we think we are evolved, we're not as evolved as we think we are.
Yeah, actually, that... So, I said earlier that the morality play kind of... The exploration of morality, the exploration of issues, can come off as kind of simplistic sometimes, but that's not fully the thing. The thing is that I am cinema sensing some of the execution on these ideas where I shouldn't be, because the ideas are golden, Like when Malloy was stuck back in the past, their execution on the idea of time travel might be funky, but the core ideas emotionally...
I was furious.
At the heart of that are really, really strong.
No, I, like, listen, I was so mad that the way that they concluded that, and I don't give a fuck how legitimate their position was or not, but the fact that Malloy thanked them after they explained... I'm glad they explained it to him and didn't keep it a fucking secret. The fact that Malloy's like, oh man, I was an asshole. Thanks for just for wiping my family out of existence.
That's because Malloy officer. A ship at that point is still off.
You're talking about the whole time discussion of where his mind was at a certain time,
and then
so that made sense.
And then just watching the like crushing despair across like Ed and Kelly's face of like, you're. Well,
that was such a strong episode.
You'll never
see
your
idea,
child.
But that's why that episode was so smart. Is because it wasn't trying to portray it in a way that made us feel all warm and fuzzy at the end.
No, it was supposed to be like ambiguous, none of this is okay.
Was it okay? Yeah. What is it not okay? And it's like it was both okay and not okay at the same time. Yeah. It was this,
He ended up going back to a good life.
Nobody's happy, and that's the way I felt after the first Mauchlin episode about like the gender reassignment, and I think season one was that
with the trial.
And they're like, after all that said, and they like we even brought in the star witness, like showed up like, bitch, I'm a woman, and they're like, oh fuck, one of our fucking people is like fucking Harrison. Yeah. Holy shit, oh that's fucking crazy. Holy shit, what a star witness, like last fucking like at the buzzer beat, you know, like, and then they're like, yeah, no, but still gonna make her a boy at the end. Was such a letdown, but it felt like, okay, this show's actually doing something.
Yeah,
it's not trying to make us feel...
in the larger picture, because this is the universe. This is not your culture, and you are not the one to dictate the morality of this culture. This culture has to find their own way, or you separate, like Bordas eventually had to, from that culture.
He took him back too quick. I'm sorry. You disown your kid. Well, you don't get to just be like, oh, my bad, I'm sorry.
Because we don't like Biden.
Fuck Clyden.
That could be the title for the episode. Is fuck Clyden.
Fuck Clyden.
He's my most disliked character in media this year. I think I do not like Clyden. No, but
Clyden sucks.
Purposeful.
Yeah,
I protect that little sweet baby with every ounce of my fucking being, and it's a fictional character. And I'm like, no, fuck Clyden. Fuck you. You can live with me. Fictional character from the future. Fictional alien creature from the future.
Well, and the fact that because I mean. Like, even though they had we talked a little bit about the Kalon, but I mean, really what took this season was the stuff that happened with the Mauchlin and even the Krill was really the more of the heavy hitters you thought the Kalon were going to be. But then you find out what the agreement was with the female Mauchlins, and that there's some, even them, that they're like, no, you know, whatever society has accepted that this happens. You're just, you know, they set them up a new place to live, and they're still doing underhanded shit.
They set up reservations.
They set up
straight up fucking and there was plenty of that in the Orville that had some reflective, like, American settlement shit to it.
It depends on what part of it you want to dive into, but again, like, that's what I think has been the greatest thing about this, is that it hasn't been so heavy-handed as in, we're just telling this story from this one side. No, we're going to mix it in a little bit. And even though, that might be kind of the right thing to do, you're still fucking up some shit and you're messing with the flow of things. And that's not always good. But.
Well, I do want to get back on the Kalon a little bit, because that was the major plot point for the series, the season, was that the Kalon, Isaac realized something that the Kalon didn't by having that experience. And it's that Mark Twain thing of like, travel destroys like prejudice.
Is that.
By Isaac being able to interact with organic species, he recognized that domination they're not the same as the creators. You know, they're different.
And that was one of the main lines of that has stuck through my mind, of like him going like, Kalon Prime, this is what I've been trying to tell you. They're not like our creators.
When
they
he care. Doesn't shoot the guy, when Kalon Prime shot the guy right before, and like, why didn't you terminate? It wasn't necessary. And Kalon Prime being like, fuck.
What do you mean we didn't have to? It's like, watch. It doesn't matter. We didn't have to.
It would be a wasted step. And Kalon Prime like, just like, fuck, it would be.
Yeah, and it's just like a head tilt of like, fuck, what? Oh.
But I like that hard turn the Kalon do, where they're willing to bring the entire fleet to his wedding without fucking question.
Yeah,
they're like, no, this is all processed, so we're done now. And they're like, no, we're used to people needing to like ease in. Like, Uncle Steve has taken 4 years to recognize that that Susan married a black man. But the Kalon on a switch is just like, yeah, no, organics are cool now. Like, they're for the wedding. They're like, let's fucking throw down.
All of us are requested at the wedding. Like, I thought that was such an oh shit moment where it was like, Christ, this is going to be like the season finale. It's going to start on restarting the war. And it's like, no, we're just here for a wedding.
No, and I love I love the oh shit of the crew. Like, oh, you did what?
Yeah. Well, was it basically he equated it to, well, they're basically my side of the family, so I invited him to my wedding.
And everyone's like, okay, we got to put out some calls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yo, listen, no, we're good. It's for a wedding. And they're like, what?
Yeah.
Imagine being the person taking that call on planet Earth, being like, there's a wedding?
There's 4,000 Kalon ships.
But I just give props to Seth MacFarlane for the genius of the writing that he did for this, where he was like, oh, no. Somebody call Earth to let them know that we have the Kalon fleet here, but it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, not that they're here for battle, but the beginning of the season was...
They're here to battle those tears falling as they see a beautiful wedding.
Oh.
Did you see her dress?
There's going to be acoustic guitars.
Did you notice that the Kalon that were there present for the wedding, there was the hard red eyes and then there were the orange eyes?
Yeah.
Well, and to me, that seemed like they were suggesting that there was some, like, fluctuations in the coding a little bit on what was happening.
Well, Kalon Prime was the only one that was supposed to have hard red eyes. The rest of them were supposed to have the dull orange.
Okay.
Isaac had blue. Kalon Prime was the only one that was supposed to consistently have the solid red eyes.
I was waiting for that like classic sci-fi moment where the red eyes turn blue and they're like, oh no, you're a friend now.
Right.
But it's like, you may kiss the bride and they're like, bloop, 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 bloop. Love cures everything. The end. And we're just like, everybody that's been in a broken relationship before, like, okay, god damn it, Orville.
All right.
You ruined the shit. Like, everything was great up to the point where you made love the answer. Fuck you. But they didn't do that. So thank you, Orville.
Right.
You know what went through my head at the wedding is that all the Kalon are there and he's in his holographic form. Isaac is in his holographic form for the wedding. And the Kalon are like, oh, she can't appreciate him for who he is. I don't think this is going to work. She doesn't find him beautiful as he is. Come on, Isaac. I object.
That would have been funny as shit.
What I love is that was actually the Mauchlin that said that.
Yeah, that's right. True. That is true.
I don't think this is going to work, but seriously.
Oh, Bortus. But
Bortus can tell Elvis this is the best. Of all times.
Since the mustache,
you can tell this was written by a New England Irish guy because the fucking ginger comes up and is like, I got this fixed by jokes.
Right. But one thing we haven't touched on was the actual war that was taking place in the beginning of the season, though.
Yeah.
Because even though we basically agree, we
forgot the whole, like, weapon brutal. That destroyed all the...
We haven't even touched on that. Well, even where we talked about where she wasn't a favorite character, but she was pivotal for the season, was Charlie, was the whole thing of kind of bucking against the system of fuck the Kalon, no matter where we stand with them, I hate them, and they can all...
Kalon killer!
And that was
without a doubt the most important and significant plot line throughout this whole last season, just taking this character that was absolutely like... lost the love of her life and didn't get to tell her that she was so in love with her in an attack from the Kalon and became the most racist against them.
Okay, and I have to point out, and I hate it, Thor Love and Thunder was supposed to be a super fucking gay movie. They promised us it was going to be a gay as shit movie. They showed us rainbows and shit on the trailers. They said this is going to be super gay.
We got one super gay.
They mentioned that people had... like girlfriends, like women had girlfriends in that movie.
The Rock joke.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson joke, not gay at all. The Orville, one of the gayest shows on television doesn't even fucking mention the fact of how gay it is. It's so gay. There's so much gayness.
No, they're, and it's they're fucking just like, fantastic. This is normal.
Yeah.
It's super normalized. It's not winked at. It's not discussed because it doesn't need to be because it's the future.
Because it's just and everybody's allowed normalized.
To fuck whoever they want like, to. And it's right. fucking no amazing. Cares. I love it. Right. I love the future where you can fuck aliens and fucking same sex. Well, and then fucking where, everybody. Yeah. Great. Yes.
And absolutely. That's where even where Star Trek Strange New Worlds is going as well. Where they're
is it Strange New Holes? Is they
well, I mean, it could be. Like, it, yeah. It depends on how it depends on how you Google it. Yeah. But
like you thought fucking Total Recall is great with three titties. We're getting way weirder on Strange New Worlds.
Off the rails. Just as
so
we know, do.
This is 8% alcohol. The krill bill. So it's starting to.
Pornhub is not a search engine. Just so you know,
fair. That is not accurate.
But well,
that is not the engine that runs the Orville.
No. But one thing we got to make sure we bring up with Charlie is that the whole fact is that Isaac did join the Kalon and basically killing like thousands of mm-hmm. people, you know, and destroying ships as
he
well.
He did say my bad though.
He made it possible.
Oh, totally said my bad and was like, I'm sorry, that was Bordas. But
But seriously though.
That's the name of the episode.
Yeah, but seriously though.
Isaac started the chain events into action that allowed thousands and thousands of humans to die,
but then changed,
and then realized what was going on, and he was deactivated and made the steps to allow the humans to be able to recover, or that made the Union able to recover.
Right, but that also brings into again the growing storyline where not only Charlie, who is a special character for the season, we all know that's yeah. all she. Doesn't carry on, whatever.
I'm racist and I see in four dimensions. You're going to be dead by the end of the season.
Right. That was kind of
awesome
forced
to keep going.
Right.
I'm like, she's racist and seeing four dimensions. You're like, she's awesome. She's great.
Okay, that did not come across right.
Too late, yeah.
It's fine. No.
We'll tolerate you like the rest of fucking Orville tolerated the racist and fucking Charlie.
But you look at the way
it's an awesome concept for a character. I don't give a shit. Fuck you all.
No, we already have the we respect all opinions conversation. So.
Yeah.
It's fine. I'm sorry, listeners, that we have a like active racist on the episode.
talking about the character that saved the Kalon.
No, it's fine. You don't have to try to dance around.
To be honest, that is
your active
okay. I'm anti
membership,
actively anti Kalon
in racist organizations. Let me not do that.
That is not the worst thing that has been said on this show.
Somebody's gonna cut into this episode at the wrong time and not recognize.
Like, oh man, fuck that guy.
Fuck
man,
right.
That guy. God, his name isn't even a racial slur.
Well, then you notice shit. I didn't say your last name on mic.
No. Yeah,
your legitimate real last
name. I know.
Okay.
Right. Anyways.
Okay. Fuck.
Well, the character that was awesome, maybe could have been, she served her purpose. You saw the way things flipped around, but the real to me what hit harder was the way Isaac tried to redeem himself, knowing what he did. Like, that man straight up committed suicide because he was like, no, it's for the better of everybody if I'm not here, but I'm still giving you something. The way he like,
okay, that shit, anybody correct. That has had any level of like depression or suicidal ideation in
right.
their life, that
exactly.
was a that really was, that was fucking hard. Hard, hard episode to watch.
I had an yeah. issue with that episode, actually. I feel like Isaac made a decision for himself and they took away Isaac's self-determination in that episode.
I go with the Paul Westerberg lyric is, don't criticize suicide, it's only in self-defense. As that suicide has affected me in very deep ways in my life, and I don't take that as a joke, and I don't joke about it really normally. But I also do recognize that the only thing that we have as human beings is autonomy over ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as it pains me to know that there are people in this world that need to be here that aren't, yes. because they made that choice, I do recognize that everybody has that choice, and it sucks sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's also ultimately, the ultimate proof of your existence is knowing that you have control over you being here. And I didn't mean to get fucking
no,
that.
I know.
Real, all but, parts like, of but, autonomy aren't pleasant, but yes, it is.
It's really
for
dark
the,
part
for the
of
sake
it.
But for the sake of storytelling for this season, that was the true turning point where you saw Charlie start to, even though she was still like, fucking DeKalon, where her mind was starting to change. And because Isaac did explain himself where he was like, I'm trying, you know, I am doing this for the betterment of, you know, I'm still doing the day to day, but it's better if I do this.
Because I think the crew's efficiency is going to be better without my presence.
Well, he's like, people will work better if I'm not around. I'm integrating certain shit because he's an artificial intelligence into the ship, mm-hmm. which will cause the ship to work better. And, you know, it really is one of those things where it's just like, and unfortunately falls into so many suicides where it's just like, no, everybody's better if I'm not here.
I mean, that's like it's, the same
thought
process.
Exactly. And that is the roughest episode. But fortunately for a TV show, you know, they were able to bring him back. They did their sci-fi futuristic stuff.
That's one of the reasons why I think that, like, Charlie was great for that, because it ended up being, like, the person that just had the most unreasonable opinion of him ended up being the one that was most instrumental in bringing him back.
Right.
That resulted in
the most resentful because
it's
galactic.
I do definitely understand, Tondi, where you're coming from with that, and I don't necessarily even disagree with it, but it is also one of those moments that if you walked into a room and saw your friend that was, like, hanging and like feet kicking, would you grab a chair and
of course. I'm saying that should have been part of that discussion. Yeah. That simplistic thing that I was talking about before, that should have been in that discussion.
No, I agree. Yeah, and I think you're 100% right, is that I don't disagree with the choice they made to bring him back, but also there needed to be a discussion that you're taking his choice away from himself. Yeah, absolutely.
But at the same time, the way they've approached everything else on this, like, I'm pretty sure that was something that, like, came up at the writer's table and they're like,
we don't have the time to break this down
Is there any way that we can actually justify this in, like, a 2-minute soundbite?
Right. Well,
fuck.
And just speaking of that in general, the way they did this season, like, each episode was basically the equivalent of, like, a short movie.
Yeah.
They totally took advantage advantage of being on Hulu. All episodes were, like, basically like this last season of Stranger Things. Was every episode was over an hour, mm-hmm. most of them close to an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the second to last episode, the penultimate episode, was 73 minutes long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was effects heavy. It was like Star Wars. It was...
Dude, yes.
Well, it's like, as soon as, like, Hobbit comes over to my place, like, every Saturday night, and we get smashed. And, like, after that episode came out of, like, where the Krill and the Mauchlin had aligned... To use the weapon against
them. Well, that's what we were talking about outside. That's what we should clarify as well, is that you never really saw anything like this in Star Trek, but they kicked the Mauchlin out of the Union, which caused a whole new catalyst for a new story. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. It created a new superpower in the middle of the Union that was trying to just bring everyone together. It was such a strong divide. That then it ended up having to be like, oh, shit, we need to bring in the people that we're all fighting against in order to be able to reunify.
Helped patch that back together because, again, we haven't brought up with the whole K'Lon thing, even though we've now talked about more separations and alliances. But the whole fact that they even had a machine where that's how they were able to go to the K'Lon and be like, we'll just wipe you the fuck out.
We literally
or listen
have a doomsday
to us.
Device.
Yeah.
So sit down, shut up, or nothing.
And it's K-Lon's a doomsday device that only affects you guys, nobody else.
I wish the K'Lon, even without emotions, would have programmed in just a long sigh to deal with that. Of just like, hey, so like we don't want to destroy you, but like we totally can, so are we good? And then being like, yeah. And then later being like, hey, you remember that thing we were going to use that we aren't going to? Because we're not monsters. Monsters stole it and aren't going to use it. So do you want to, like, help us get it?
Well, they kind of did that. They kind of were like, so we have to go do this because your speech. Because
you're dumb.
We're coming with you because you have proven yourself to be incompetent. I was like, yes.
Yes.
Yes, fuck yes. Basically, that's awesome. But, like, no one can be like, shit, you got a fucking point.
But that also fights the fact of the episode of where Isaac committed suicide, of where as the Union, where the true Union loyalties lie and how every species should be, is like, yes, we did something dumb, but we're not above asking for help, even from someone who we've been fighting with, which was how, again, how this season just came full circle. I've had that friend
right. that, like, it was, they do enough dumb shit that occasionally they'll reach out and be like, hey, haven't talked in a while. Listen. I got into some shit and you're like, dude, I haven't heard from you in 3 years. I know. Yeah. But listen, do you have 80 bucks, bro?
How do you feel about bailing me out?
That's me with like, dude, my car won't start and I'm too drunk. I'm like, I'll be right there. I'll look at it. Okay. I got your car started and I'm driving you home.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I'm excited for any fourth season that happens with this show because they'll be able to do even more new stuff.
I'm excited that I felt like it could have been poorly handled if Isaac found emotions and then that's when his relationship really took off and he was able to really have that like interconnectivity. The fact that he found it, didn't remember how he felt and it was taken away and he only remembered how she felt. And they were still able to maneuver around that and her still have a relationship
with
him.
That would have been too data.
To the point where she accepted his proposal of marriage and he was able to, in two swoops, have a eulogy for Charlie that was like fucking like tear jerking.
I bawled like a bitch.
It was fucking fantastic for somebody that isn't an unfeeling robot to be able to deliver.
Do you realize how hard it is to write an actual heartfelt eulogy for someone that was supposed to be racist against your kind while you're supposed to be something without emotion and actually make someone bawl?
He did that again in the vows where he's like, hey, the one time that I fucked up, which doesn't even make sense because I'm not supposed to fuck up, was after we broke up. Like, that's how fundamental you are to my being like the best version of myself.
I never want to be an error again.
Yeah. Like, being like, we need to be in this relationship because you make me better, is basically what he was saying.
Yeah.
Without emotion. Without fucking emotion. And, like, that meant a lot more to me that they took.
And to her.
And also that means that when he does, and he will, eventually find that emotion and he gets that, you know, and that becomes part of his character, it's going to be earned a lot more, I think.
At the same time, like the way that they portrayed like Charlie's last moments of telling him to get the fuck out before he had to deliver that eulogy, like I started bawling when she was like, Amanda, I'm coming home. And I was like,
oh, dude, that one scene where, and they did the classic of just like her face and just the explosion coming out and she's over everything.
I'm here to save the Kalon. I know I'm the most racist bitch against them, but they can be better. I'm coming home, baby.
Yeah.
Like, I started fucking bawling like a bitch there.
Yeah.
Can't handle it.
God damn it.
Because, I mean, there was so much foreshadowing for Charlie not lasting past this season, which, I mean, we were kind of talking about on the side and stuff. She served her purpose.
Charlie doesn't know.
But I mean, like, she served, like it kind of became obvious she was not going to be a permanent character. Like, it's just like the way she was introduced and obviously was a catalyst for, like, I'm a racist and, but I learned.
That was a little bit jarring when, in the middle of, like, really playful dialogue, she was like, I'm a racist. It was a little bit heavy handed.
A little Ralph Wiggum.
Ralph Wiggum.
And it was weird how they introduced her, because they introduced her with, like, Isaac walking in the mess hall. And everyone else being like, oh, fuck you, we're leaving. And then she was like, oh, that was a little abrupt and weird.
So like, you want to sit down at my table, you clanger?
And then she's like, what was going on? Oh, yeah, all of that. We don't forgive you for our friend's deaths. You shouldn't come here again. Fuck off.
I wish instead of toaster, like they did in Battlestar, they just named him some other kitchen appliance. Like, you fucking blender or something.
I totally forgot about that. The toaster for Battlestar. Yeah. Oh, God. But
you toaster oven.
What? Oh, Jesus.
I still think the way that they actually did her whole character arc was brilliant. It started out as like, you are a fucking piece of shit. And it came out as like, you are literally the most selfless thing that actually created intergalactic peace.
But the great thing about that
racism. And that was kind of the idea of like how all of these shows are set up.
The whole thing is that it just wasn't done in an episode or two either. It was like the whole season of just like you see little gradual steps happening until the last couple episodes where you're like, that hard turn of like, nope, this is the way it's got to be, and sure, okay, let's do it.
Ultimately, what this season, and what was in a similar way in previous season, was really discussing about all these different cultures that are clashing together and trying to find a way to work together is that at the end of the day, what it takes to find that unity that everybody can coexist in their own way is a level of empathy towards people other than yourself. When you lose that, when you don't start looking at how your actions affect other people, is when you start looking at other people as less than or different or not worth the same value as yourself. And these stories, especially in sci-fi, they're so deeply important because they remind us that no matter how different we are as people, as different backgrounds, different cultures, at the end of the day, the thing that makes us human is the fact that we have our own experiences. And to disrespect that is the most inhuman thing you can do. So these stories tell us that there is no wrong way except to disrespect a person's value as a person, as an individual, as right. a living creature. And that's something that's really hard. Like this hard. And we deal with it every day. Every time you look at literally, I don't care where you live, listeners, you go to your local newspaper Facebook post and you look at the comment section. And let me tell you how much that tests your humanity.
That's heavy.
Looking at that comments.
Yeah.
That will test your humanity more than anything fucking else. But that's what this show is showing, is that people, in spite of all the challenges, have to stand strong and fight against those wants of intolerance and hatred and judgment. For the better of the universe, and that's
well, it's the Federation ideal. It's,
yeah, it's what, or the Union in this case,
because the universe doesn't work if you go into a universe full of strangers and you're like, and everybody's going, there's no universe full of strangers. Well, everybody's dead.
I love that it shows that process is being deeply imperfect on this series, which is that's the big difference between this and Trek, is that. Trek, it's not that they get it right the first time, but this shows
Trek's like, we have it down to policy and procedure.
Even the people with the right idea do it the wrong way sometimes in the Orville, and that's what I appreciate about it, is that everybody's fallible and everybody has the best intentions, but it doesn't always work out the best way, and it's deeply human and flawed, but with the best intentions, and still shows the human spirit in the best way.
To get on some lighter notes for a moment, why the whole thing we mentioned earlier about when Bordis, when they were trying to at least a temporary alliance with the more female heavy species, and those little jabs that Bordis was giving, just being like, really, man, really?
Like these chicks.
He's like that is so, like, he actually said something like, that's sexist or something, and everybody's like, what?
No, yeah, well, that, he also put on the worst bachelor party ever.
Well, but at I'm not done. But the fact of, in the midst of all this, you have characters like Malloy and Lamar who are also messing with characters like Bordis, where they tell him to do the mustache, or because the way the Mocklins are, that whole episode of where they're having him eat all this random shit because the Mocklin digestive system can handle it, and he's eating glass and metal and all this other random shit. The fact that they're like, no, we love you, man, but let's see how far we can fuck with you. And in a fun, good way. And Bordis is just like, all right, humans, cool. I'll do it. No, like, you know?
Bordis has gone to the other end of this point where he's like so anti- like what his culture believes, that he's gone the other end where he's just like, ugh, fucking, like, you don't even understand how fucking, like, backwards you are. It's like, motherfucker, you were this 6 months ago. Like, calm down. Like, it took a deeply personal individual experience for you to understand how flawed this was.
Right,
like, give other people some fucking time, dude.
Like, I mean, he's the newly proselytized. I don't know if you've ever met a new convert.
New convert. Oh, they're the biggest and loudest.
That's, absolutely. Yeah.
But was still fine with the renewal of vow ceremony being a
fucking stalk your partner through the woods and rape them.
A good old hunting fuck. You know?
A good old hunting fuck.
Oh my God, title of the episode. A good old hunting fuck.
Like, oh shit, my partner's literally throwing a boulder at my face. I need to track him down and rape them, and now we're mates again.
Cool.
Like, fuck. Okay, so cool. All of the culture is not
awesome
gone.
That they called that out in the episode because it's like, wow, this is really disturbing. And then later, Malloy was like,
nothing says love like sexual assault.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but that's the great thing about this whole show is that no matter all the fucked up shit that they have no problem calling out somebody going, but will you?
You can come. I still firmly believe this as much as I hear day to day all the time that like you can't joke about anything anymore. That's fucking bullshit. Context allows for conversation about literally anything. But you better make sure your context makes sense. And that's the thing. You want to wire walk? You want to talk about some edgy shit? This is in the 80s. You're not fucking Little Miss Muffet and doing that shit. Like, you got to make sure that shit is funny.
You know what? Yeah. One of the most masterfully things that they could have done during that scene, during that like reinstitution of the mating vows was of like, everyone's like, oh, that was kind of weird and like a sexual assault. Let's have a 3-minute awkward silence of like, none of us are really okay.
Right? Yeah. Well,
speaking of none of us really being okay, I think we are at the point where we need to start doing this. Drunken scene where none of us are going to be really okay.
No.
All right.
Nope. Here we go.
Let's.
Making a drunken scene.
This is all from the last season here. We've got one from Isaac and Commander Grayson. And then we've got one with Malloy, Grayson, and Charlie.
Oh, man,
and Mercer. So
we totally forgot about the Isaac getting the advice from Lamar to sleep around, basically.
Oh, to sleep around. Yeah.
God.
You know, we didn't talk about him much at all, and he was such a great character. Been a great character, but like I feel like he got fleshed out a little bit more in the season too.
I feel like we need to come back on the Orville for a reason or another sometime down the road. For sure.
I mean, I'm happy with every season we do. Yeah. Another, because I love it because it's is similar to a thing I already like. I love it on its own. Like,
absolutely.
This show, that's the one thing I want to say from this episode, is this show has earned its stars as being something separate from Star Trek.
Right. Yes.
Oh, definitely.
It's absolutely.
Definitely a clear homage to Star Trek, but
like I started watching it and for the same reason that you watch like a viral video that's like a fucking parody, and then it's like, oh no, this is...
Yeah.
This is now.
Oh, this is good.
All right. So the second half, the second part, all four of us have parts. So who wants to do Isaac or Commander on the first one? I don't give a shit.
I'll do Commander.
All right.
I'll do Isaac. That's fine.
All right. So whenever you're ready, Isaac and Commander for one episode from the new season.
Hello, Commander. I apologize for disturbing you.
No, it's fine. What's up?
It is my understanding that a visit to a crew member's quarters during off-duty hours can invite speculation regarding intent. If you wish, I will send a ship-wide communique assuring the crew that this was not a romantic or sexual encounter.
I would just not say anything. It's all good. What can I do for you?
Okay, a little note to self is anytime it's a sexy dialogue, give Scotty the short part, I think, is the rule moving forward.
That's what my wife says, too, fair.
That's what God said, too. Give Scotty the short part.
The old gods and the new.
It's true.
Okay, so true. We got Malloy, Grayson, Charlie, and Mercer. So
apparently I gotta take Charlie on this one.
Okay,
now.
You can take Charlie. Let me Captain Ed Mercer because fuck it, why not?
I'll Malloy the shit out of this.
Okay, that means that that Tondi, you are
Commander Kelly Grayson.
You are just Graysoning up the joint a little bit. Yeah. I like Tondi unintentionally is just like, no, I'm fucking the tall, hot blonde.
That's Shelley is now Picard.
You know how every time I describe Tondi, I say basically like the like
Kelly, sorry,
mid-sized bald black man version of a tall, hot blonde is how I.
Oh, I like that.
Fair. It's all there. It's
I,
all
actually,
there.
I think that's how I'm going to describe you from now on.
As you, yes. Oh my goodness. Yes.
Not quite a compact,
I've got
but
a
not
supple
a full
waist
size.
And. Long, blowing, flowing hair on the inside.
On the inside,
on
yeah.
On the inside.
this show is so dumb. Why do people listen to it? okay, right. God
are we going to have a narrator? We need a narrator to kick
no,
us
we
off.
Don't. We fucking don't.
Okay,
that's
well,
fine.
I'll just do it.
What if I'm Captain Mercer. Okay.
All right.
Jesus.
All right. So apparently I'm allowing the shit out of this. So, because I love Scott Grimes as well. He's
do it.
Fucking awesome. So he sees Commander Grayson, takes a drink in one gulp. Whoa, Commander, you might want to pace yourself. We're only in the 1800s.
Don't worry about me. I'll make it.
Have you been through the whole simulation?
Almost. The pub crawl through history is a classic in my family. My dad once made it from ancient Greece all the way to the water wars.
I've got to say, I've never understood the pub crawl. We're here drinking. The booze is going to be exactly the same in the next place.
Who are you, the old gold digger or something?
That was lovely.
Are you Gary Gulch? I mean, God.
I was going for putty on a helicopter. Is what I was going for. God damn it. All right, so that's the end of this fucking bullshit.
okay.
Thank you so much for listening to another, whatever this is, that we do here. So,
something wonderful.
Something very wonderful. And if you want to... tell us how much you enjoy the wonderful. Make sure to rate, review, subscribe on Apple, on Podchaser, on Spotify, anywhere you can rate and review. And let us know what you think for future episodes. GeeksUnderTheInfluence@gmail.com, GUIPodcast.com for all the links to stuff. 804-505-4484. That's 804-505-4GUI for a hotline number that takes texts and voicemails. So dump them out. I don't care, male, female, or in between, dump them out. Show us your goods. or just leave a very nice and polite voicemail is also an option, I guess. So
sure.
And we'll find you next time for another episode. I'm Mike the Hobbit. Join us or die.
Fuck Clyden! And fuck shut the Clyden. Fuck up, Hobbit. Join us or die! Join us or die! Or I will swallow your soul!
GUIPodcast.com
Oh no, my children!